Welcome to the Veterans Nation. I'm Tori Eversman, co-host, along with my husband, retired Army First Sergeant Matt Eversman. Each week, we'll distill the knowledge from inspiring guests who have succeeded despite many obstacles and found peace in their own lives. Through compelling discussions and interviews, the Veterans Nation takes a deep dive into what it means to be a disruptor. So relax, sit back, and enjoy another episode of the Veterans Nation.
Hey, Mike Mooney, welcome to the Veterans Nation, my friend.
Welcome, Mike.
Thank you. So great to be with you both.
Well, listen, you are a gentleman and a scholar for agreeing to join us on our global podcast. But I want to make let our audience know a little bit of your background before we jump into it. And, you know, for those of you all listening in the spirit of transparency, Tori and I have known Mike Mooney for a few years now, and that story will come out in a little bit. Though Tori's not met in person, you know, Mike is a wonderful guy. I met him when he was working at Roush Fenway Racing, and since then, you know, Mike has gone on to start an incredible new venture, which we're going to chat a lot about today, about reputation and brand management. But Mike actually built his reputation creating brand and athlete and sports property distinction by launching and leading award-winning marketing and communications campaign. He's represented many highly regarded brands like Mercedes-Benz, 3M, Tylenol, Walmart, Eli Lilly, and Fifth Third Bank. Mike uses his public relations, reputation management, and leadership experiences as a speaker to educate, train, and coach leaders, entrepreneurs, and business owners to proactively shift the way they value, manage, and build their brands and reputations, which is huge for all of us in transition as we're beginning this new life. Mike's also a published author. His recent book, Reputation Shift, 5 High Performance Truths for Success, is out. It's smashing. He is a fraternity brother of Sigma Chi, of which I am too. And most importantly, he is, and this puts him way on the top of a short list of my friends, he is a big green egg aficionado. So, Mike, welcome to the podcast.
You know, I appreciate that. I think for most, it's that last part that's the most exciting, right? With the big green egg. I mean, that's where it's at.
Well, it's a cult.
We see you on Instagram, you know, so we know your reputation. It precedes you.
Man, I'm just trying to keep up with you guys smoking it down there in Florida. You know, just trying to keep it going up here in North Carolina. But thank you so much for having me. This is thoroughly exciting. And as you had said before, you know, Matt and Tori, we've known each other for a long time. But having seen and watched from afar, as well as up close in some cases, the journey that you two are on to help veterans, to work with them from your own experience, I cannot thank you enough for your work, passion, and efforts to really, you know, bring people to their next level. So thank you for that. I wanted to say that before we even jumped into anything else. Just thank you.
Oh, well, it is definitely, thank you very much. We appreciate the compliment, and it's definitely a passion of ours, and because we also have lived it. So it's, you know, everyone has their cause, and I don't want to say this is a cause. This is a great mission statement for our lives. So
absolutely. Absolutely. And helping so many people, you know, so thank you for doing that.
Well, we hope we're helping. If we help one person, that would be great. So Mike, I love your book. Holding it right now, and it's got those little post-it tabbies. Mine happen to be pink. It's filled with little pink tabs and underlines, and I just want to again say the name of your book, which is Reputation Shift: Lessons from Pit Road to the Boardroom. And there's some things that I wanted to, and we'll do it throughout, but just to start on page 5, you wrote, "The Oracle of Omaha, Warren Buffett, said it best. If you lose dollars for the firm by bad decisions, I will be understanding. If you lose reputation for the firm, I will be ruthless. Guess what?
Mm-hmm.
You are the firm. You are the CEO of your life. You should be ruthless with how you manage your reputation because of the power it has to transform your life and business. And whether that is a positive transformation or a negative one is completely up to you. I don't care who you are in the world. That right there, those two paragraphs, I was like, okay, I don't need to read the rest of the book. This is it. Like, this is like, this just everybody, you know, it is completely up to you. Those few words, just how important and I want you to expound on that from your experiences.
Well, first of all, I appreciate that. And I wish I had known that I had nailed it on page 5, because if you told me that, I would have like not had to write so much more after that. Gosh, it would have been easy. But, you know, it really, to me, you know, calls out the importance of the fact that we do have choices in our lives. And ultimately, the opportunities that come our way are the output of the choices that we make and the things that we say or the things that we do, or more importantly, sometimes it's the things that we don't say or the things that we don't do, right? That people will key into, that will have a positive or negative impact on our reputations. And I found that quote from Mr. Buffett and just thought that it was so profound, because to me, it spoke to a focus and a level of commitment that went beyond the dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
In today's world, everyone's just so focused on the bottom line. You know, I heard this from an executive a few weeks back when I was talking with him. And he said, you know, we could be a great company or we could make next quarter. Right. Mm-hmm. And to me, it really jumped out. It was like, wait a minute. So you're saying you could be a better company or you could just make your next quarter and your earnings and revenues, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't believe that they have to be mutually exclusive, right? You could be doing both. But the fact that we're looking broader beyond the dollars to ensure that we're building reputation for the organization will ultimately bring more dollars for the organization and for the individuals where we're talking about here, right? It's really about the individual and how that impacts them and their lives.
Yeah, so now you got to suffer through the knucklehead question, you know, that follows this on. And I know, in fact, because it took me, you know, chatting with you over several weeks to really start to get a better feel. But, you know, Mike, as we're going to get into veterans and their transition, but are reputation and personal brand the same thing? Like, you know, just tell us a little bit about either what's the similarity or the differences, because I think, and as we've said before, there's a lot that's really pertinent to a young soldier, sailor, airman, or marine that is either about to make the transition or in the process of it, or maybe is already out and has got a, you know, dare I say, either fixed reputation or rebrand. So could you just give us that the backdrop so we're all talking the same language?
Yeah, sure. And that's a great question.
Awesome question.
I love that.
I'm up 1-0.
I love it. Mark that down.
Exactly.
Mark the time slot on that one and keep it. No, you know, I would say this, that one is not the other, right? A reputation, the way I define a reputation, and there are a lot of different definitions out there, but basically the way I look at it is that your reputation speaks for you when you are not there to speak for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's pretty simple. I mean, when you aren't there and someone brings your name up, Matt, right? And there's an opportunity for someone to say, oh my gosh, you know, Matt, he's amazing. And he's done these transformative things within the world of the veterans world, or it could be the other way. Right. So it's what is said about you when you're not there to speak for yourself. Your brand, on the other hand, is really what you're known for in terms of, you know, an experience. When people will come and interact with you, it's what they come to expect to experience with you, mm-hmm. which then is based upon your reputation.
Got
right? So they actually complement each other. They're different, but they complement each other.
Right, right. Now, and again, if you're a veteran thinking about it, this ought to, you ought to be contemplating from a very broad picture, what it means down to clearly your level. And if you're an employer or a potential employer, you know, you too have your own reputation and brand, and you also must be thinking beyond the norm when you think about veterans. But more on that soapbox in a minute. But Mike, no, that's a good lead in.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot we can unpack within that too, and what you were just saying there with the employers as well as the employee, the veteran, identifying or the organization that they'd want to be working with, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, my thought there, quite honestly, is especially when it comes to employment, sometimes we're so quick to just grab whatever comes at us that, and maybe you can shed more light from the veteran side of things because it is so important as they're making their transition into the workforce. But you really have to think about not just the work opportunity, but also the reputation of the organization that you're about to join.
Absolutely.
Because that's going to rub off on you. There's that thing called the halo effect, mm-hmm. right? That, you know, that you join an organization that maybe has a phenomenal reputation. Well, guess what? You know, that's going to have a positive halo and impact on you because you are one of them. And vice versa, you know, so there's a lot to be thinking about of the power of reputation and how it impacts so many different aspects of our lives, both personally and professionally.
So how did you, would you share with me and with our audience how you found yourself in this role and then ultimately that you were moved enough to write a book about it?
Yeah, so basically, Tori, I spent the last 25 years in the world of motorsports where I was building brands. I was doing that for athletes. I was doing it for organizations. And as I was doing that, a lot of my work was in crisis management and reputation management. And after years of playing cleanup, it became clear to me that there are times, and more often than not, when you dissect a crisis situation, there was this like critical point in the path where there were values and there was behavior. And more often than not, when you looked at a personal crisis situation, and which became a crisis of reputation, ultimately, you could really like trace back the steps to where the person walked away from their values in order to make some type of decision. Whether it was a long-term, short-term, whatever it might have been, a lot of factors go into it, but there was this disconnect there. So I had that sort of in the back of my mind as I was being more of a student of crisis management. And the other part of it is, you know, gosh, why do people wait until after the fact, right? When we could have done something proactively. And that's what jumped out at me when I started thinking about a new approach, and one that I don't think is crazy and radical by any stretch, but in today's world where people tend to want to like look away and not deal with what could be,
mm-hmm.
right? It's all the idea of being proactive versus reactive. You know, I'm a big believer that there's a dramatic shift in empowerment between asking the question, what if? Right. What if this happened? What if that happened? What if this were to, you know, impact our company or me personally versus the what now? Right. What now is, oh, crap. All right. It's hit the fan. We've got to, you know, hold the presses. Let's get in here and fix this now. And that in today's world is just a bad spot to be caught in because social media, the wheels, I mean, it's a vortex that mm-hmm. can get out of control so quickly. So anyhow, as I was seeing this come to light, you know, I just thought the time was right to take my stories from motorsports and the experiences that I've had, package them up into five strategies that are really they're practical and easy to use that would create a roadmap for pretty much any, if you've got skin, it can help you, right? Whether you're, you know, a business owner, a leader, an entrepreneur, someone who started in their career and transition of career, you're a seasoned executive. I mean, if you have skin, reputation surrounds us. So that's where I believe the time is right break out and start this practice and then put the book into circulation and try to start telling the story.
Yeah, I think it's really good. I just recently, in addition to being a podcaster myself, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I just listened to Oprah's podcast with LinkedIn CEO Jeff Weiner, who talks about compassionate leadership, which,
yeah.
Are you familiar with this?
I am.
I found it to be incredibly inspirational, and I sent it to Matt to listen to, and by mistake, he ended up listening to a different one, and he came back from listening. I was like, what did you think of the podcast? And
it was Oprah talking to this woman about relationship and, you know, forgiving yourself. And I'm like, man, it was really interesting, but it's a little over my head.
I was like, what?
And why do you want me listening to this? What are you trying to tell me?
What are you trying to tell me here, pal?
I know. I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, the compassionate leadership. I thought that was really cool. Have you found that your themes seem to marry up with what I was hearing Jeff Weiner say in compassionate leadership?
Yeah, I do. I do, because you know what? I think the big part of that is reflection, right? And an introspective look at how you're leading and how you're looking at the life around you. Which is really where, gosh, you know, I know I've asked Matt this question when he's asked me about the reputation piece and you know, how do we look at that? And Tori, I'll ask you, because this is one of the questions that really, you know, jump-started my thinking around this project is, you know, if I were to ask you right now to put a dollar value on your reputation, what would that be? How much is that worth? What's the dollar amount?
Well, I think much like the MasterCard ad, I would say it's priceless.
Right?
You're sharp. Right?
It's one to one now.
So that, you know, I'll typically get a couple different answers. One will be, that's it exactly. It's priceless. You know, others will be, well, it's 10x my salary. Right. So they're trying to, you know, really look at it from where they are in their career and how much they're making and what the opportunities might be. Which I still think even then a 10x, you're undervaluing it. And then the third answer I get is, wow, I never really thought of it that way, right? So getting back to the compassionate leader, right, and I was saying the introspective look and how we look at the things that are of value in our lives, it's that last answer that I think is the most provocative, because it's getting people to think differently. Right. And especially as it relates to the value of our reputation, because the reality is we often don't think about its value until we paid a price.
Mm-hmm.
And in today's world, that price could be catastrophic to your career, to your family life and legacy. I mean, look at the headlines today. You see with the entertainment world or business leaders, the sports world. I mean, the headlines are littered. Absolutely littered with examples where people have walked away from values and they have now, you know, created reputations that are tarnishing and destroying legacies and lives.
Yeah, humans being humans.
Yeah. Well, that's it. I mean, we are. And that's the other part of it. You know, I mean, look, I'll tell you this, and this is the scariest thing about writing this type of book, is that I don't want to be seen as someone sitting like high above on the high horse looking down on people, right? Because we're all human. We all make mistakes. I make them every day. I call out several of them in the book, in fact, you know, of places where I've stumbled and fallen down. But I still believe in the message that we can still make a difference, right? Getting back to that opening, paragraphs that you read, Tori, and kind enough to call out, is that we have choices and we have opportunities every day, but ultimately they're our choices to make. So what are you going
to
do?
Take us back to a large mistake that or stumble that you had that ended up having a positive outcome, but perhaps at the time you were devastated or mortified or embarrassed by.
Ooh.
like I said, the verbal waterboarder.
You weren't kidding, man.
Not for little boys in short pants and tie shoes.
This was not in the prep notes. In fact, I didn't get any prep notes. So
on purpose.
No kidding.
And the reason I'm mm-hmm. asking you this question is more specifically for our listeners who are perhaps transitioning or our veterans who may be facing their own stumbling blocks or we had an interview the other day, we're calling them roadblocks. It doesn't have to be where you embarrass. I was just using that as one example. It could have been a roadblock in your life. Mm-hmm. But I think that what I'm trying to illustrate is that we are all humans being human. And I always like to sort of hear when people have been punched in the nose and you know, have a bloody nose, like how did they, I think you said this, it's how you respond to those moments that mm-hmm. can change the outcome. And so I was just curious if you had perhaps something came to mind in your career that you were like, you know, I took a wrong turn or I came up against a roadblock and it was really frustrating for me and I got, you know, I really got a bloody nose from it, but ultimately really good thing happened because of that.
Yeah. So, and I'll try to leave out the names to protect the innocent on that. But, you know, so I was in a position years back where I was asked to come into an organization and help shift and change the way that they were going about their business, right? Everything from the way that they were positioning themselves in the market all to the way that they were working with their partners to the internal culture. And I was super excited about this opportunity because I felt it really played into my strengths in marketing, communications, and brand development. And I'm going through all of this and laying out plans and laying out the strategy, and I'm getting all the head nods and all the right social cues that you would typically get from a team of people that are saying, yes, we're on board. And I made the mistake, and this was like a legacy organization. There were people there 15 years, 20 years, you know, down the line. And I made the mistake, I realized after the fact, because it was like pushing rope up a hill mm-hmm. when you actually tried to get things done, right? Mm-hmm. Because I really believe that, you know, people love the idea of change. They love the opportunities of the blue sky and the green grass and what can come of it. But ultimately, they don't like to change, right? We're creatures of habit. And there was this quote that I found that I tried to live by, which was, you know, for people to abandon the old, they have to have promise in the new,
mm-hmm.
right? And what ended up happening was I spent about a year banging my head against the wall and felt that my plans were right, the approach was right, what we were doing, and we're actually seeing success in the work we were doing. But you know what I missed? You know what I missed on the front end of this that I look back now and I'm like, oh my gosh, how in the world did I miss this? I missed the fundamental step of building trust with the people on the team. See, I thought coming into this organization with the reputation I had and the things that I had done and what I've achieved, right? I'm using air quotes around achieved, but the things that I'd done, I felt that background and my reputation sort of gave me that automatic trust of, hey guys, trust me. You know, I've done this before and we'll do it again. Follow me. Come on. We're going up the hill. I didn't take the time to build it with those members of the team. And that really, in my opinion, while we still did really good work, I don't think it was all it could have been.
Interesting. That's it. Well, yeah. That's quite, wouldn't have predicted that one, you know, from the dynamics perspective, because I would have thought just, hey, you know, I should be kicked for saying, you know, your reputation speaks for itself, but, you know, it would, and that they saw the merit in bringing you in and everybody's nodding their heads and, totally on board. And Listen, you know, for all of you, go ahead.
Did I overshare? Did I overshare there?
No, not at all. Listen,
I think it's important. Trust. You know, sometimes, you know, we miss the basics or that fundamental piece. You know, and then that in that particular story, trust was that key point where I look back and I'm like, how did we miss that? You know, so well, anyhow,
you know, Mike, two things that come up and that. That experience, you know, whether you're talking about, hey, I didn't build trust first, or I made an assumption the wrong way, or, you know, I just flat out fumbled, I being whomever, you know, that has been a common thread, first of all, with entrepreneurs that we've had on the show. Mm-hmm. It's just inevitable, you know, and so those listening, entrepreneur or intrapreneur, it's going to happen. I mean, you're human, you're fallible, you can't, you know, do it right all the time, and you're going to look back and say, golly, what a jackass I am. I can't believe I missed this or didn't do that. Well, listen, face it, it's going to happen. Yeah. The second thing is, though, as everybody has chimed in the past, is that, you know, you do get over it. You learn from your mistakes, and you don't make that same mistake twice, and off it goes. So, again, like we've been taught as little children, on the playground all the way up till now, it is going to happen. I think sometimes for veterans, and I can only speak as a veteran, it's hard. And you like to think, you know, that I know we're not zero defect, but it's really hard. And when you fumble one or hit a big no or hit that roadblock, obstacle, pothole, you think now it's just me. It's the only one that's happened to, and it's literally catastrophic. I'm done. We're here to tell you, no, it's not. But, you know, with that, I would say, you know, and Mike, you know, that clearly if your personal brand is still strong, even with a setback, and as long as you continue to do the right thing and stay true to who you are, with that, is that fair to say? Your reputation will still grow with you. You're not done because of a mistake.
No, I would you know, agree with that 1,000%, 1,000%. You see, the interesting thing in that is that when you stumble and fall, we often think it defines who we are. It doesn't define us. It should only refine us, right?
Subtle say that again, Mike, say language. That again.
Yeah, subtle language. It doesn't define us. It refines us, right? If we're able to pull the lesson out of that, you know, the needle out of the haystack, and I believe but the audience that you have in veterans that, you know, leaders are always compelled to look back and find ways in that they can improve, right? And in my experience, that's how I've always tried to approach this. So that, you know, when I look at how we operated in that particular experience, you know, I operated the same way today as I did, you know, then. I just learned and you know, put another lesson in there to say, hey, you know, before I start with this, even though I have what I believe is a strong reputation, I'm going to work first to make sure I'm instilling trust and ensuring that you buy into this as we're building it, right? So that's one part I put over on one side, Matt. And then to answer your other question about how, you know, you're building that the reputation, you know, it all starts with values. It all starts with values, right? And I'm a big believer, and I have this in the book, of what I've illustrated as the reputation equation, is that your values drive your decisions. Your decisions then drive your behavior. Your consistent behavior over time is ultimately what becomes that reputation, right? So I would just encourage the listeners and the people who are in transition and trying to figure it out or trying to understand and even build their brand or their reputation is that you got to center yourself on your values first and how you're living into them and how they're working their way into your actions and your behavior and your mindset.
Mm-hmm. It's smashing.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I think that's fantastic advice for all of us. So one of the themes that we found with a lot of our guests is that they have a mentor. Who's your mentor?
Goodness. So there's I've got several. I've been very fortunate in that, you know, over my career, there have been several people who have sort of stepped into my life. And would you like me to tell you who they are and what they do? Or just what they do in my life?
No, I think
as much as you'd like to share, down on the couch.
I mean, some people have said it was their father or their grandfather or their mother, or it's been a business acquaintance. What we have found is that that successful people like yourself, there's an influential person who's either a family member or not a family member, it doesn't matter, but somebody who is influential in giving sage advice, and how important that role is as we go on this journey called life.
Hello again, Tori here. I'm not only co-host of the Veterans Nation podcast, I'm also a partner in Eversman Advisory. We are committed to connecting the best military talent with the best companies looking to hire them. Whether you are a veteran ready to find the best fit for a new career, or an awesome employer looking for fantastic veteran talent, we have a solution for you. Visit us at www.eversmanadvisory.com, that's with two N's, or email us at matt@eversmanadvisory.com. Now back to the Veterans Nation.
Yeah, I love that, you know, and I'm a believer too, and this has been my personal experience, is that you're going to have different mentors for different seasons in your life, right? So the mentors that I had, growing up, they were family because that's sort of who was there, my dad, you know, and others. But then as I got into the workforce, my mentors really became, you know, people who were leaders or entrepreneurs or thought leaders and people I looked up to based on the things that they had done, and that they were willing to take an interest and roll the dice on a young kid like myself and say, yeah, I'm willing to invest some time into this person, you know? So, and even now, as I've stepped into my new chapter with my practice, I've got new mentors that, I'm working with. And these are people that, you know, are 20 years down the line of where I'd like to be, you know. So they've been phenomenal to speak into me, speak truth into me, speak guidance and insight, help me, you know, reduce that learning curve that we all go through and all the, whenever we take on new challenges, right? I mean, we should always be looking for people who have sort of blazed that trail before us, because you can learn so much from them, you know, and save yourself some trouble along the way.
Yeah, and again, Mike, I hate to kind of feel like I'm your, you know, Costello to your Abbott and giving color commentary, but you know, this mentorship, certainly in the military and at least in the Army and the units I was in, was basically a built-in component. Formally or informally, there was always that figure that you, the soldier, were drawn to, wanted to emulate, and it just generally soak it all up. You get out here in this new world. It's definitely in 10 years, I have not found a formal program anywhere I've worked yet. I've had to really seek mentors to try and learn from. But at that point, veterans, I'm telling you, number one on your list of things to do is start looking for just great people outside of the military now that you can learn from. And it doesn't have to be about business in particular or whatever, but you need that person that's been out before you that can give you some guidance. I can't stress it enough. It's tough, and you get lonely, you're out of your tribe, blah, 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 all that stuff. But find a doggone mentor just to get started. I promise you'll see big payoff. Got to take you back down memory lane a year or so ago, I think, Mike, and you and I were chatting once, and you told me a neat story about Junior Johnson and being committed. Do you remember that story? Are you involved?
I do.
So great, and it's not, maybe this is the wrong point in the story, but before I forget it, I wanted to bring that up because I just thought that was just a great anecdote for life in general, and I promise we'll get everybody back to reputation, but tell us that story.
Well, no, I think it actually does tie to reputation, but also really anything that we're doing in our lives that we feel is worth putting effort and energy towards. So several years ago, I had the great opportunity. I was in my late 20s, and the PR agency I was working for was hired by NASCAR to run all the public relations for NASCAR's 50th anniversary celebration. And I was on point for that program. And it was amazing because we got to work with several of the legendary drivers that were still alive and hear their stories. I mean, these were men that really were blazing the trail for a sport, but completely missed the window of TV exposure and large scale notoriety and money and all the things that today's athletes are enjoying and sometimes taking for granted. So I had this opportunity to be working with Junior Johnson, who many may know. If you're not familiar with Junior, he is in the NASCAR Hall of Fame. He was a driver and a car owner, very successful at that. But he started his career driving as a moonshine runner in the mountains of North Carolina. And was actually arrested and pardoned by a president, down the line. But that's how he got his start, was running moonshine. And he parlayed that into a NASCAR driving career. But as we were going to an event one evening, here I am, this young 20-something kid, and I'm like, gosh, how often do you have the opportunity to sit and talk with a legend like this? And I don't know why, but the one question I asked him was, is there a silver bullet? Is there some lesson that you've lived by that's helped you become so successful? I of all the things, that was what jumped out of my mouth. And he said, yeah, in fact, there is. And he said, it's really simple. It comes down to a breakfast plate. And I said, okay, you have my attention. So what is that? And he said, well, look, it took two animals to make this egg and bacon breakfast. Right. You had the chicken that laid these eggs. And guess what? It'll lay eggs tomorrow. It'll lay eggs the day after that and the day after that and the day after that. That chicken was involved in making that breakfast plate. He said, you follow me? I said, yeah, I'm following you. He said, OK, good. Now, that hog that made the bacon gave everything it had, everything, one time. It was committed. That hog was committed to that breakfast plate. So ultimately, that's always been my question. He said, are you involved or are you committed? And that's the difference right there. And so, in my opinion, and take it from Junior Johnson and others, though, to be successful in whatever endeavor that you're going to, again, put your passion, your energy, your resources into, ask yourself, am I involved in this or am I committed? And I guarantee if you're committed over time and with consistency, you'll get the results you're looking for.
Yeah, hearing it a year and a half later, it's still awesome.
You're never
going to look at a egg and bacon plate again the same way. I'll guarantee you that.
No, it's true. But listen, and that just shows us too. You can't just get up and make the donuts every day. You can't just sit back and wait on the couch. You can't hope. Hope's not an option. All that stuff. I mean, you got to be committed. You got to hustle every day, and that's just life, man. That's absolutely just the way things got to be. And that's thanks for sharing it. That was a cool story.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I've always said, look, hope is not a plan.
Yes, right?
Hope is not a plan. It's not. And the other thing that I would call out as well is just another thought and like a visual to your mentor comment and what we're talking about there, Matt, and having someone in your life that's going to be there and maybe guiding you along your path. I offer up another thought in the book, and it's called, having your spotters, right? Or as I call it now, mm-hmm. racing with blind spots. When you look at a race team, most people think of the glamorous, sexy jobs of, the driver, the pit crew, and the crew chief as the folks having the most important role on that team. But the reality is that there's somebody who has an even more vital role on that team, and that role is the spotter. And now, Matt, you know what the spotter is, right?
Yes. Yep.
You know who the spotter is. Can you tell us what the spotter does?
Yeah, so the spotter, and this, if you've ever watched the NASCAR race, I know 95% of the time they always show the track, but every once in a while they'll pan up, you know, to the big glass-faced building, or they'll show the infield. And Mike, I can't remember whether they're on both, but generally the spotter is as it is. It's the guy on top that is watching everything in front of the driver. It is telling him or her the pitfalls ahead, where they need to basically, you know, step on it, where they need to slow down, where they got to go right, left, brake, but all the critical pieces that that driver that is so focused on, you know, 1 meter in front of them, the spotter really is the lifeline to everything ahead.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, they are the eyes in the sky and have a full field of vision that can not only see what's going on ahead of the driver, but just as importantly, can see their blind spots, can see the things that are happening behind them and around them, that when the driver is solely focused on their objective, which is winning, they sort of lose sight of the other things. So my question to people, and when I talk with leaders and business owners or entrepreneurs, is who are your spotters? Right? Mm-hmm. Who are the people in your life that can see your blind spots, that you have such a level of trust with and can open communication that they're willing to tell you the things that you need to hear, not just what you want to hear? And again, a huge distinction between people speaking the truth to you versus just platitudes and making sure that they're not rocking the boat.
Yeah, you said that. You wrote that on page 52. You wrote, leaders need people in their lives who will tell them what they need to hear, not what they want to hear.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's an example that I use, and the sad part is a lot of the examples I use is when people have stumbled, right? But it helps to sort of highlight a couple of things. One, the actual point we're trying to make in the story and what we can learn from. But two, if it can happen at such a high level and very visible level, it can happen to all of us, right? I mean, no one's immune from this. So I don't know if you remember this guy, John Skipper. He was the president of ESPN for like 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And last December, out of the blue, he unexpectedly steps down from his post as president of ESPN. And he said it was for family reasons. And, you know, it shocked the people in the organization. We couldn't, you know, we were trying to figure out why. It was kept very quiet. Well, about a month or two later, it was brought out in the news and came to light that John was using cocaine, had been using cocaine for a while, and one of his dealers was going to start blackmailing him.
Mm.
And instead of having to face the public shame of that coming to light, he decided to step down quietly and hope that it would all go away. You know, now Confucius once said there are only two things you can't hide from: the moon and the truth. So, you know, eventually it's going to come out. In this case, it did. And now my point in this story is not to talk about, you know, decisions and accountability, because I believe that as leaders and the captains of our own ships, that we are accountable for our actions and decisions. But what really jumped out to me was, holy cow, where were his spotters?
Yeah.
Where were the people in his life? I mean, you know that we're going to speak to him, because that clearly isn't something that's going to be a secret. Someone had to have known something. Where were they?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then more importantly, if they were there, was he listening? Right? So in the spotter-driver relationship, it's really two-sided. The spotter's got to be willing to put themselves out there and tell you what's going on. But you, on the other hand, have to be willing to listen and know that they've got your best intentions in mind, that level of trust. Right? And we all need that.
Definitely. I think as Matt and I are moving forward with our consulting business and helping employers understand this amazing pool of veteran talent, having spotters, if you will, who are veterans who are already working for these companies, who can be the mentors and who know,
right,
you know, who understand the military culture as well as the corporate culture that they're in now. And that's mm-hmm. really a very important component of what we're doing in helping to educate the employer side, because the veteran side needs to be educated too, because there's, right. you know, there's a whole host of things, and it's not anything that's not bad. It's just different from the military. I know we talk about this a lot, about just the institutional language in and of itself is a huge difference. Mm-hmm. But I loved it. That part of your book when you were talking about the spotters really resonated with me. In fact, I recently used it when I was talking to a customer, a client of ours, and in discussing this whole veteran resource group that needs to be built within their company. And mm-hmm. I used that example from your book. So it obviously really, really hit awesome. Home for me.
Well,
that's,
it did.
That's great, Tourette.
Go ahead.
No, please.
No, I was just going to say, and you know, when you all, I don't want to spoil it for you, but there's a really interesting illustration of this in Mike's book, when it's not just a spotter, but when you talk about cultural and language barriers, literally, you know, between the spotter and the driver, that's pretty wild. And, you know, yeah. how we, but anyway, that's Mike. We won't say any more about that because folks get Mike's book, off Amazon, read it. It is good. So Mike, let me ask you, if I could be so bold to say, and I don't know how to frame it other than to give you the short story. And we're talking veterans now. You know, everyone tells veterans, hey, you're getting ready to transition, get a picture, get on LinkedIn, don't make it sound so military. And so what happens, of course, is that, well, a lot of people don't exactly want to follow those directions. So we'll start with pictures. You know, you look on LinkedIn and they're soldiers in uniform, and that's their dress uniform. They're in their overseas battle uniform, and they all have their, you know, they all look like cool guy Delta Joe and, you know, operator SEAL with baseball hats and beards and sunglasses, and they're menacing and they're tough and all that stuff, which I get and I understand. And, you know, a lot of people see that and they're like, wow, that guy is just, it's everything that you the civilian commercial public saw on television in the movies. That, I think, I've always contended, leads to a bad stereotype. You know, I think then, you know, we start to have another barrier to break, to say, hey, I am a veteran, but, you know, I don't need to be the beard wearing, tattooed up. I'm a tough guy in every facet of life world. I need to break out of that and start my own, you know? So how do you take that? Yeah. How do you take somebody that has done nothing to be lumped into this group, and to all the tattooed wearing, you know, Oakley loving, you know, I love you, and that is not a knock, yep. and I truly mean that.
We both have tattoos.
But mine's just a little flaky Sigma Chi one that like looks like freaking an indelible ink pen on
but
my.
But nonetheless, is a tattoo.
Yeah, it is. I forget I have it, but you know, Mike. So how do you break out of that? Yeah. How do you? I don't want to say the odds are stacked against you because, listen, it's not egregious. But, you know, for that veteran, it's like, hey, I need to show everybody that's not me. What are the three or yeah. four things they need to do without even thinking about it to get going?
Right. So, I mean, it's a great point because for many, it's like building that bridge from where I am and what I've been known for to where I want to go and what I want to be known for and do. And the challenge in that, when you were illustrating that and kind of talking about the LinkedIn profile with the beards and the Oakley, I mean, I see it. I absolutely, you know, there was a great mental image there because we do see it. And here's the challenge when you have someone who's trying to make a transition like that. I know the statement they're trying to make to an extent, which is, you know, this tells you who I am. When you think about a warrior, you think of someone who's committed, disciplined, right? Can focus on the objectives, about team, all the right things. But the problem is we're such a visual animal in society that the first question that someone who's looking to hire somebody in transition is always, how are they going to fit?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Into our culture. So right off the bat, you've just helped sort of like peg that question, the meter, right, on how are they going to fit. That's just pegged right now because I see this picture of someone who is bearded and doesn't look like anything that we have in our organization right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to say, hey, you have to conform to the man and the corporation. Mm-hmm. No. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that you need to position yourself visually in a way that is going to be appealing, that is going to be, you know, somewhere that someone's going to be comfortable and they can see how you would assimilate into that group, right? Versus like, oh gosh, am I going to have to talk to them? Are they going to show up that way when we have them here for an interview? You know, am I going to have that conversation about a wardrobe? So I'd say that's the first thing. When you're looking at your brand and what people are going to see, think down the line two or three questions. The first one being, how are they going to fit, right? The other is then, how are we going to communicate? You talk about barriers, right? Communication is a tremendous barrier between the civilian and the military world. And I'm not saying one's better than the other, but if you can gain that understanding, or maybe in some cases lose some of the jargon, and that goes on both sides.
Yep.
Corporations have binders full and pages of acronyms that they use, and it absolutely is the funniest thing when you get into some companies, and I've worked with some of them, where you're like, I have no idea. I've been in a meeting for an hour, and you said eight things. I have no idea what any of those acronyms mean.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, we all have them, right? And it makes us feel like we belong to an extent, you know, because, oh, the new guy doesn't know what that means. But the point is communication. Understand what you're trying to communicate, what your story is, you know, and do it in a way that you could explain it to a 10-year-old.
Right.
And I'm not trying to offend 10-year-olds.
No, you know? I got you.
But if you can do that in a way that would make sense to a 10-year-old, then you are going to get your message across loud and clear to a recruiter or someone or a hiring manager, without a doubt.
Yeah, no, Mike, seriously, that is great. One, thank you. Two, if you're listening, pay attention, because that is it. And you know, we somehow, we always get into this a little bit of this, you know, oh, I just want to be me and I've got to express my personalities and everything. And we all are creatures and we all have norms. But at the end, you know, it's one of those, hey, you can be right and unemployed, or, you know, you can give a little consideration and make a living. You know, I mean, they're just,
yeah,
at the end of the day,
yeah,
man, it's just, as you said, there are just some places where it's not going to be a fit, and you're going to have to make, and I'm talking you, veteran, are just going to have to make a little bit, you're going to have to, or be prepared to understand that everything Mike just said is, you know, that's just how the world works out here. And for the other 99% of the population that is not in the military, not supporting, and I mean that economically, doing business with supporting, everybody does support. Mm-hmm. You know, you gotta do some searching and thinking about it. But it sounds superficial, well, I know, but it's true.
No, and I'd add, you know, to that, Matt, the other component to really think about too, when you're in transition. And again, the beauty of the world that we live in today, because of social media, digital content, that we can reinvent, we can recreate, you know, who we are and what we want to be. So, as we're thinking about transitions, the transition doesn't have to be always to the white collar world, right? There are a number of highly successful veterans who are taking the training and the work they've done in the military, and whether they're creating performance boot camps, whether they're out there speaking, whether they are, you know, running security, you know, type programs, there may be a place where that look, that military look, is actually going to be more helpful to you, right? So we're, you know, versus becoming a clean cut white collar individual. My point in that is you have to think about the swim lane that you're going down and how you will best represent yourself and be best represented in that swim lane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Does that jive?
Yeah.
No, totally. So unfortunately, we're going to have to start to wind down. I think we're definitely going to have you come on as a guest again, Mike. We always
I love it.
you've just given some amazing pieces of advice, and I know you probably just have just a ton more to share. So we'll have to get you on again soon. But we always ask our guests the same question in the end. The theme of our show is disrupting the status quo and being a disruptor. What is Mike Mooney's
Speak much?
What is your definition of a disruptor?
Yeah, that's a great question. So here's what I would say. Here's what I would say is that a disruptor is someone who's no longer sleepwalking.
Mm. Oh, I like that.
We're going to have a competition.
I know.
I'll get to that. Continue. I'm sorry, Mike. Go ahead. Someone who's not sleepwalking.
I would look at it that way. I think it's you know, people who are ready to wake up and, you know, shine light that cast away shadows. You know, I mean, we need more of that in this world where we're waking up and looking at the world in which we live, and more importantly, the power and impact we can have in this world and among each other to lift each other up.
Mike, that is a great one. And I rudely interrupted you when I said we ought to have an award. You know, everybody that we've had on has had a great, you know, nothing has been predictable what people have said about being disruptors. And yours just is absolutely fantastic one. I really dig that. And but we really should have like a trophy at the end of the year for like the best, you know, disruptor.
It's a great question.
It is. I thought of it, but it wasn't. It was all Tori.
So,
well, no, that I would believe.
No surprise.
Your listeners too. Come on.
Yeah. No surprise there, man. That's it.
So your book is called Reputation Shift, and where can we find it, and where can we learn more about you?
Sure. So you can, as Matt said earlier, you can hop on Amazon and get it there, or you can go to MikeMooney.com, M-O-O-N-E-Y, MikeMooney.com, and you can pick it up there, as well as learn more about my practice and what I'm doing to help people and organizations, you know, build out their brand, tell their story, and you know, drive greater opportunities in life. It's an exciting time, I'm telling you. You know, it really is, and I want to thank you for the chance to come on and talk a little bit about, or maybe a lot, about, you know, what's in front of all of us here.
Now, Mike, well, as you and I have said over the years, there was always going to be something. We were both looking at problems through different lenses, but similar, you know, on a similar battlefield. And for those of you all listening that continue along with us, and those of you all who professionally are going to work with Eversman Advisory either now or in the future, I can promise you this, that Mike Mooney is going to be a name that is going to be used with our the caper we're running here a lot. You're going to hear more from him because it just makes good sense. And this idea about reputation and brand management, and forget the bad stuff, you know, the dustpan cleanup on the other hand. Think about as we're building it proactively and building companies that are going to be veteran friendly and veteran focused and all that stuff. I mean, that's Mike. That's what Mike does for a living. So you're going to get to know him well. Mike, my friend, you're awesome to join us today. We thank you. Enjoyed the book. And man, we would love truly to have you back on the show. We didn't even get to Nike and that buffoonery today. But we'll save that for like cocktail hour.
That sounds good. And listen, thank you. I'd love to be on anytime you'd be willing to have me. And again, like I said at the top, just thank you for all that you're putting into helping the men and women who have served our country really transition and start the next chapter of their lives and empowering them to get going in the next mission. I can't thank you enough. And thank you both for that.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Mike, have a good one, my friend. We will be in touch and talk to you soon.
We hope you have enjoyed this podcast. Each week, we introduce interesting and exciting people to the rest of the Veterans Nation. They really are no different than any of us. Listen to their stories, digest what you hear, dump what you don't like, take the rest, and make it your own. Be a disruptor. Thanks for listening, and please follow Eversman Advisory on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We'd love to hear from you.